Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
So hey everybody, welcome to episode 365 of the More Than Just Go podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we also have Mark Rubin on the line in San Jose, California.
Hello.
Home of the WWDC.
That's right.
Well, sort of.
Not really. It's Cupertino.
Yeah.
Which, granted, is almost right next door, but it's not San Jose, technically.
Yeah. Is there like a road that divides San Jose from Cupertino? Like, is there like a...
Well, there's a town. You're right. San Jose is very strangely shaped, and there is one section of San Jose that does kind of reach out to the west and does touch Cupertino. But from, you know, if you're going from downtown, you go through Santa Clara first, then you go through Sunnyvale, and then you'll hit Santa Clara, more or less.
Sorry, from where to where?
From San Jose, downtown San Jose.
Yeah.
You can, if you just sort of go drive directly west, there's a couple of towns you'll go through first. But if you go down around sort of the leg of San Jose that sticks out to the west, then you can cross directly into Cupertino.
Yeah, I remember I went to an enterprise design thing at Apple once, and I think you knew which building it was, but it was like an old HP building or something like that. But the address was actually in San Jose, but it was just up the road from
from
Cupertino. Right?
It's all very close. Yeah. San Jose, yeah. Cupertino, Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, even Mountain View.
As you drive down from San Francisco to San Jose, isn't it like a solid block of like one city after another, like Redwood City and Mountain View and Palo Alto? Aren't they all kind of like connected?
More or less, yeah. It depends which freeway you take. If you take the 101 or... Sorry, just take 101 because I'm not from Southern California. Just take 101. Then it is kind of the cities are right up against each other. If you take 280, technically they still are. I don't think there's a lot of like unincorporated land in between them, but there's a little bit more space out there. It's not it's not like populated the whole way on the west side. 280 is the one that kind of goes up the west side of the peninsula.
Yeah, and more greenery, like you see more trees and stuff like that. Less industrial kind of highway kind of buildings, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, I don't know if, like, you know, I got one of my picks in here. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but there's this really cool app. I'm going to skip ahead to that right now, called Flighty. I don't know if you've seen it, but somebody's created a build or patch onto it, or like a group onto it, called, which basically shows all the people flying into WWDC from, like, Flighty's a flight tracking app, right? And he's made this view, and you can see everybody that's going to San Jose from wherever they're going. Like, you see, like, the flight path. So there's like 207 as of right now, there's 145 attendees have put their information into this app, right? 207 flights, from 88 airports, 33 countries, including Toronto, of course, and some Seattle, I guess. But yeah, and if you click on it, you can actually see people who put their like alias in there. So you can see like who the people are that are flying in, which is kind of cool. It's a neat little sort of, app for people going to WWC. Like it's kind of like those, you know, beacon apps we used to have back in the day when for conferences and stuff like that. So that's cool. So that's flighty.app. And then I think
I'm actually, I looked at that and I'm actually amazed how many people are traveling so far for a remote WWC. I mean, there's one day on site, right? But that's just the keynote, you know, you just watch that in online.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't get it. I don't get why people go to so much trouble and expense for this. It's not like you're there in person. I don't know.
But there's a lot of events going on. I think there actually is a Tuesday thing happening at Apple, right? And I'm just looking it up here. Yeah, because if you have a ticket, there's like if you do apple.com/developer, you'll land on this site. So there's the keynote on the 5th at 10 a.m. PT. You're in daylight savings time, right? PDT.
Yep.
Design awards are at 6:30. Wait, is that right?
Yes.
Oh, so they're after the State of the Union, I guess, right? Oh, State of the Union is at 1:30. Sorry. Right. Oh, not at 2 p.m. Oh, interesting. Used to be at 2 p.m. all the time. I'll have to change my calendar because we're going to watch it from remote. And then there's something to do with, I thought there was an event after, like a developer center thing or something for people. You have to have it. Well, you have a ticket, right?
Yes, I do.
What do you see when you go into when you log in? Because there's a Beyond WWC link here.
Okay, let me check that Beyond WWC.
Well, I think that's for like you know things like we're doing the Rayburn like live podcast on an evening. No, I thought if you went to special.
I don't really see anything special here.
Special event at Apple Park, June 5th.
Oh, you know what? My ticket is with my work email, and I'm not on my work machine, so I don't see anything special. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check later.
Yeah, because I do believe, because one of my guys is going, and I was sending him stuff that I found throughout the last couple of weeks, but one of them was like Tom Paul Hudson tweeted about it. That's where I can get it from. You can look too, Jaime.
I'm looking at developer.apple.com, WWDC 23, beyond-WWDC, or if you go in the upper right-hand corner, you can find it there too. And there's a mishmash of stuff all over the world, and I'm trying to figure out what you might be thinking about.
Yeah.
These all look like more community events like Copenhagen, Tokyo, Helsinki, Istanbul. James Dempsey and the Breakpoints live in person somewhere in California, June 7th. It's kind of funny how they put that.
Oh, is it on that site? Yeah.
Yeah. The talk show with John Gruber.
Yeah.
Ottawa.
By the way, these things were
Australia.
I'm trying to get this episode out before on the weekend, right? So if you're listening to this and you're going your way down to WWC, if you haven't already, you know, booked for these spots, it's going to be tough to get into them. So as we're rattling them off, you should be applying for tickets like the Breakpoints and the talk show is probably sold out by now, I'm sure. Tuesday. Okay, so Tuesday, yes, there's a special event on Tuesday the 6th, Mark, at 10 a.m., 2 p.m., and 6 p.m. at special event at Apple Park Developer Center. And then there's a dub climb if you're into climbing. I don't know, is there any mountains to climb near Cupertino there, Mark?
Sure, there are. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd call them mountains, but there's, you know, there's tall hills. There's mountains kind of between here and the coast. Yeah, and there's mountains east, too. There's mountains all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's the Core Coffee meetup. There's probably like one or two tickets left for that. That's with Melon and Kai from Vancouver. And there is the iOS Dev Happy Hour in real life, which is something a lot of us go to. And then there's Student Swifts, which is another thing. And then on Wednesday, another dub climb, WWDC Community Open Space, another Core Copy meetup. Ooh, part three, it says. So there must be a one on the weekend, maybe. And then they're doing the talk show at 5 p.m. on Wednesday the 7th, and then James Dempsey and the Breakpoints are after that. So And there's another WWDC meetup with Core Coffee. So yeah, cool. Oh, and there's also on Saturday, there's the Dub Pub Quiz 2023 edition, right? Oh, so if you're there on Sunday at 1:30 to 3 p.m., there's a Core Coffee meetup. And then there's the check-in at Apple at Infinity, or Games at Infinity Loop, it says here. Requires WWDC ticket. So yeah, and that's at Infinite Loop, which is the old headquarters.
That's right? The old one, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And then Revenue Cat pre-WWDC Barcade Bash. That's on 6 p.m. on Sunday as well. And that's the one that Paul, if you listen to the previous episode, Paul said he's going to be at that one. Paul Hudson's going to be in the area for the week as well. So people do come down, Mark. I don't know. You know, it's kind of, I guess it's just community. They just want to hang out, right?
I guess, yeah. Yeah.
And there's a hackathon on Saturday, Sunday on the 10th. 10th and 11th. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this before. Being here, you know, in Silicon Valley, it's the magic of, you know, Apple and all that is a little bit less than if you're from somewhere else and you're coming in from out of town. So I don't know. I see iOS developers all every day.
Yeah. Wow, you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can spot them, you know, for those of us from out of town, it's hard to spot, right?
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, I mean, the whole area. I mean, it's funny because I remember I was thinking about this, you know, when I first started, you know, I had my first iPhone and I would go to like Macworld and I would go to, you know, WWDC even, just walking around the city, I would expect everybody's walking around with a BlackBerry or an iPhone or something. And there was like nobody, like they're walking their dogs, riding their bikes and whatever. And it wasn't until you went to like an actual, like a developer event where you saw people had devices, right? So.
Well, back then you couldn't walk around with your device because someone would steal it.
True, right? Yeah, mm-hmm, or even your iPod if they saw you had the white yeah. earbuds, right, with the
yep.
cord.
Yeah,
yeah. All right. Well, we're gathered here to do our usual. Oh, before we do that, we actually have an Ask MTJC, Jaime, and it's from Mastodon, the site that you're not on. Yeah, so Geo Freeman on Mastodon asked, and this is a question for all of us, what would you do with 96 gigabytes of unified memory? And I think that had to do with the new architecture. I can't remember what that's about.
Is that current of Apple Silicon, or is this rumored and proposed? I'm a little...
No, I think this was maybe it was a configuration of... What did we do on... This is going back 4 months, right? So... What? Because I never thought to look on Mastodon for Ask MTJC. But what did we talk about?
Looks like it's a MacBook Pro, 96 gigabytes of unified RAM in the MacBook Pro M2 Max from 4 months ago.
Yeah,
according to Reddit.
Yeah. So MacBook Pro. So this is the M2 one, right? Ultra Max. Apple.com. Let's go there.
Well, I think there's sort of two obvious answers. Video processing and 3D rendering.
Yeah.
Also maybe some like neural network training kind of stuff. I don't know if that needs a lot of memory. I mean, I guess you could have a bigger neural network if with more memory, but that's more just number crunching a lot of, you know, over time rather than using a lot of memory, but definitely, yeah, the video processing and 3D rendering stuff for sure.
Now, you know, it's only 800 gigabytes for 96 gigabytes of unified memory. That's $800, right? So that's not a... Did I say 800? 800?
800?
Yeah, it's only $800 for 96 gigabytes of unified memory. So, and plus... But, you know, I guess you'd want to have a bigger than a 1 terabyte storage. You can go to 8 terabytes of storage, and this is the MacBook Pro 16. I have a question, though. Wouldn't RAM that heat up when it's being used?
RAM is non-volatile.
Yeah. So it doesn't. Oh,
so it doesn't.
Not gonna,
yeah.
So why do CPUs get hot then, and GPUs?
Well, so the CPUs and GPUs are crunching all the time. You know, they're doing stuff all the time. RAM, you set a value and then it just kind of sits there, sort of passively, and it takes a very, very tiny amount of current or power to just keep it alive. But if you're not actually writing to the RAM or reading from the RAM, it takes very, very little power because nothing's happening. The power usage comes from when you transition from a 0 to 1 or a 1 to 0 state. That's the beauty of what we call CMOS or complementary MOS technology, mm-hmm. is when you're not switching, the quiescent power is extremely low, very different from the older like bipolar technologies where there's always current flowing and always power being used. So CMOS, it's only when you switch that you have any significant power usage. So it's very, 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 very low power from memory.
Well, I know from using Scratch memory in Photoshop days, and I think this is true for just about anything you want where you want to use a Scratch kind of memory. If you had 96 gigabytes of unified memory, what's that divided by four? Because you need four times as much
data 24. Generally.
24, so yeah. So if you had a 24 gigabyte file and you wanted to like manipulate it or whatever, you'd kind of want it. You'd in theory, you would need 96 gigabytes of RAM, of memory to be able to, you know, you'd have the original file, you'd have the modified version, you'd have some working space, and then you'd have some overhead for the system to do its or the program to do its work, right? So that was a challenge back in the day when we had Photoshop when it first came out, was, you know, you constantly running out of memory, or it would use your hard drive for Scratch disk, right? Mm-hmm. And back then, you know, like back in the early days, like in, I'm talking like 2000s and around there, I guess, there were RAM cards you could buy, like, and they called them RAM disks, right? Which basically were like a Nubus card that had like a chunk of RAM on. I don't even, can't even remember how, and it would have been in megabytes, not in gigabytes, right? But people used to, like, people would even run their system on there just for performance, right? Compared to like the old mechanical hard drive.
Because really, well, we're a little bit spoiled these days because we have SSDs, which are much, much, much faster. But yeah, the hard drives are ridiculously slow to read and write from. So if you're doing any kind of heavy I/O kind of work, which a lot of stuff is, you know, if you're saving stuff to, quote, saving the disk, then if you were doing that from a to and from a hard drive, it would be really, really, really slow. So what they do is basically they pretend that this chunk of RAM is the hard disk, and you do your interaction. You know what it's kind of analogous to? It's kind of analogous to a context, managed object context in Core Data, where you have this kind of scratch pad area where you do all your reads and writes into this scratch pad, this context area, and then with some frequency, you actually write it to the disk, quote the disk, mm-hmm. because that's a much slower process. Core Data does it for different reasons, but it's an analogy.
Cool. Well, I think does that answer the question? Do we think satisfactorily in terms of what you would do with 96 gigabytes of unified memory, besides spend your money on it?
Yeah, I think it just goes by leaps and bounds, right? Like right now, let me just identify what's on my screen. So Zoom, two browser instances of Chrome, each of which has several tabs. I have your different document folders open. I have QuickTime open. I have I'm looking at my audio right now, input level from the settings app. Looks like Dropbox is running. What is that? 1Password. And a whole bunch of other things that, you know, you take it back to, I don't know, like DOS or something of like, hey, you're running this one program. No preemptive multitasking.
Yeah.
You want to do something else? Change programs, right? Put this one away, put that one back. Like, I think we start adding new things like, you know, on the top end, Mark talked about like training ML models or maybe doing, you know, video rendering, 3D rendering, that sort of thing. And it sort of becomes, yes, right? You can do all those, not this is specifically for rendering, or this is specifically for my Apple Music, or this is specifically for like the latest season of Ted Lasso or something. Like, yes, I can do those things all at the same time. In addition to maybe things like interacting with virtual assistants or, you know, ChatGPT or Bard, or maybe something that Apple might come up with. That's kind of the theme of the show today, right? What's coming up? So what would you do? Like, oh,
you could even do an Xcode build without completely dragging down your machine.
Good old Xcode and Slack and Android Studio all on the same machine. That's what you would need to do.
Yeah. Yep. My money would be that if I'm using Logic Pro, I'd still get a beach ball, because lately I'm using an M1 MacBook Air to edit the show. And lately, I don't know if it's the OS or whatever, but lately I'm getting a lot of beach balling when I'm doing some heavy processing in Logic Pro, which is weird. Anyway, just to close out this section on the 96 gigabytes of unified memory, I am looking at customizing a 16 inch MacBook Pro Space Gray Apple M2 Max with 12 core CPU, 38 core GPU, 16 core neural engine, 96 gigabytes unified memory, 8 terabytes of SSD storage, 16-inch liquid retina XDR display, only 3 Thunderbolt 4 ports, HDMI port, an SD slot, headphone jack, MagSafe 3 port, comes with 140-watt power USB-C power adapter, backlit keyboard with Touch ID, all of that for $64.99 US.
But you know what? Why are we even talking about a paltry 96 gigabytes when we've got some brand new machines coming out that'll be announced in a week or so?
Yeah, in less than a week. Four days.
Less than a week. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, 4 days from when we're recording. I have a little countdown timer running on one of my websites. I forget which one. But yeah, I took a screenshot of it today and put it on Twitter and got some love. But yeah, so moving on. What we're hoping to do today is talk about what we think is going to come to WWDC. Now, there's been a couple of spoilers already, so if you're not into spoilers, you know, maybe tune in next week. But where do we want to start? I mean, there's a few. I mean, we know that some things are coming for sure. Like, we know there's like each OS is going to get incremented. We know there's a rumor of some Macs, like you just said, and there's surprise, surprise, there's some sort of new reality OS, right? So where do you want to go? How do you guys want to start? Start at the top with the iPad?
Well, yeah. So, it sounds like iOS and Mac OS are, this is kind of an S year for those, right? So it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of new and exciting stuff. There'll be lots of updates to the core.
There'll be new emojis, Mark. Don't worry.
There'll be new emojis, right? Yes. Yeah. Maybe some new size classes too, but if we're lucky. Yeah. Yeah.
Dream.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I do hear that there's going to be a new look and feel to the Watch OS, if anyone actually still is paying attention to that. I'm not sure from a developer point of view that many people are. I don't know. But other than that, and tvOS, we haven't heard about anything from tvOS in a couple of years, have we? At least nothing significant.
So I got this, I think this is from 9to5 Mac or whatever. I got this list that we have in front of us, this bulleted list, but they're lumping tvOS 17 in with Apple TV and HomePod. So I guess HomePod runs a flavor of tvOS.
What do you mean they're lumping it in?
I feel like it's more like they say there's really nothing that's being added to tvOS, Apple TV, or HomePod from like a technical standpoint, mm-hmm. other than Dolby thingamabob plus plus, HDR thingamabob plus plus, and then they'll talk about Apple TV plus shows, which have absolutely nothing to do with that operating system.
Yeah, or with
that
developers.
Seems to be the pattern. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, with TV, here's what we got. Hey, thanks, bye. You know, I feel like that's why they lump it together that way. But I don't know what you would do with tvOS unless it's somehow tied into like reality OS or XR OS or iOS, as I like to call it.
Huh?
So it's been a minute, but if you've got iPad OS, then the current I with the letter I OS should by all means become iPhone OS, because there is no other I device that runs it, right? And then now that you've given up that, then I think you say EYE OS should be the proper name for the reality OS, XR OS, whatever they call this supposed new thing.
Yeah, but we're going to get all that sort of confusion where somebody said today, oh, they were talking about the new Fast and Furious, everybody calling it Fast and Furious X. Like, do we go through this with the iPhone 10, that the X is 10?
Mac OS 10, same thing.
Like, isn't the Fast and Furious movie that's out right now, isn't that the 10th movie?
It is, in fact, in this 20-year franchise.
Yeah.
I think for WatchOS, the, you know, UI changes, I think, are probably more interesting to me as a user than they are as a developer. Because mm-hmm. I do wear my watch every day. I would guess that Mac OS will get some nice quality of life kinds of things. I wonder if it will get some time in the sun with, you know, Swift UI based goodies to, you know, start chipping more away at the need for AppKit. Similar, I think, for iPadOS and iOS, where I'm really hoping for Swift UI to just continue to evolve to do cool stuff. And it feels like there's enough people online that I probably agree with to say kind of need like core data UI, for lack of a better word, to be the new hotness that replaces what core data is really good at, but lines it all up in a nice cohesive story with the life cycle that Swift UI has and iCloud and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So immutable, lightweight core data objects, whatever that would be, right? Whatever those mean.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Seamlessly, you know, works offline by default and syncs to the cloud as, you know, just like turning the tap on the water tap, it just works, and you only really notice it when the plumbing breaks, kind of thing. And of course, they'll let you extend it in some way. We needed to do something really fancy and special, but it would be kind of nice to just, you know, take all of the goodness that it does and just make it work all the way through with, like, you know, look at all these other things. Like, we've talked about combine, we've talked about async await, we've talked about actors and a bazillion other things, and it's cool, it's great, but it's this not truly unified story that makes it really easy to be like, if you are starting today, thanks for joining the club. Thanks for joining your first WWDC. Here's what you should do just right out of the box.
Now, one thing that's potentially pretty big on the iPhone side, not specifically about iOS, the operating system, but with the App Store, is that it looks like they're going to allow sideloading of apps. Right. Which we've known has been coming for a long time. This has been, there was a court ruling in the EU, I think. I mean, I want to say a year ago.
I got a link there in below somewhere.
Yeah. So I have mixed feelings about this one. You know, I was never really all that opposed to the walled garden and Apple having protection. And I never really thought the 30% cut was all that unreasonable. When you think about how much you'd have to spend to either have your own storefront or you know, remember when we used to sell software in cardboard boxes shrink wrapped in a physical store, that you'd pay a lot more than 30% there. So I don't know. I think people are maybe a little bit spoiled and you know, don't want to maybe recognize how easy it's made Apple to how easy Apple has made it for developers to be in business and even to just exist. So anyway, so the world is changing. Don't know how it's going to look in a year or 2 years or 10 years, but yeah, we'll see. It's a new world.
Well, hopefully it's not the end of, you could say that people wanted a new Twitter, and guess what? We got one, right? You know, you know, like be careful what you wish for is the advice I'm trying to put out here, you know?
Yeah, that's right. You're saying that it's that this is not a positive thing. This is a negative thing.
Yeah,
right.
100%.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, you know, better the devil I know than the one I don't.
Right.
Yeah.
You know how we've known how to work around the issues today, and what happens in a side loading world? What happens in a alternative payment methods world? Been wishing for that for a long time, and to your point, like, what does that cause?
Yeah. Well, I mean, all these payment gateways that we used to have to deal with, and I'm thinking back, you know, back in the web days, you know, when before iOS came along as something for us to develop on, you know, there's all kinds of bad actors out there. I mean, there still are people snooping our networks and, you know, trying to hack in or break into our stuff. But, you know, there were like payment gateways, it was Kaji, there was, you know, all, you know, credit card takers, you know, had really bad gateways for you to try and, I mean, I can't remember a good one, let's put it that way. they were a bad lot, right? And depending on how you set it up, it was always challenging and painful, and the user flow was horrible. And I mean, the one thing that I've always liked about Apple in general, and especially like the Macintosh, is that, you know, because they had the one sort of, you know, user, you know, the human interface guidelines, you know, on how you set up menus, and, you know, there's always an edit menu, there's always a window menu, right? There's always a help menu, right? And the same thing, they've sort of translated that into what we do on iOS now, right? And if we take away some of these sort of common sense in a lot of ways, you know, safeguards that Apple's put in place, like, you know, I like you said, Mark, having written or tried to write storefronts in the past, you know, before Apple came along, I mean, as soon as Steve Jobs got up and you know, said, hey, we're going to open this Apple store and we're going to set everything up for you. I punched the air and said, yes, you know, I was so happy to have that taken away from me as a responsibility, right? Or challenge, right? So, I mean, you know, sideloading has always been a challenge. Like, you know, we used to get people sideloading apps at the office all the time. And, you know, if you only, like, we only had like 100 iPhone devices and people were caught, like designers and stuff that were sideloading and using up our accounts. And, you know, plus you never know what somebody's got on their phone and or where they got it from or what, you know, build it is. And, in you know, there's also the security angle, like they're walking out the door with beta code. That's sort of a, like, a, I realize that's a developer-centric approach to it. But, you know, I don't, like, it's bad enough with what's going on in the world. I don't want my mom calling me up or your dad, Mark, calling you up and saying, hey, I got this sideloaded app from something and now my phone's blowing up, right? You know?
Yep.
So they kind of protect us from ourselves, I think, in a lot of ways. Yep. So I guess what, round the table here, we're all opposed to sideloading?
the thing I worry about is that, ignoring the developer side that I think you covered quite well in the sort of customer support side, looking at mm-hmm. the sort of larger societal effects,
yeah.
You know, your average app that would normally be on the App Store from an indie dev is like not normally going to be able to convince people to go through the hassle of sideloading. So you'll probably by default have most of those users end up using nice, safe stuff from the App Store. What concerns me is some of these larger ones, like a TikTok or a Facebook, a Twitter, just pick them, the established ones. It's like, yeah, actually, you get this cool thing, this, you know, this nice carrot we're going to dangle in front of you. Just go sideload this thing. Also, it completely destroyed your privacy or stole all your credit cards or, you know, took nude photos of you, whatever it is that could be, you know, the nefarious things that the App Store was ostensibly protecting against end up becoming real lucrative for, you know, nefarious evildoers. And I'm not picking on those in particular to say that they would. I'm more concerned that they could or they cannot today.
Yeah. Hey, kids, it's a new Huawei app, you know, install this and you become a drone for the Chinese government, right?
Yeah.
No offense to China, of course, but.
Yeah. It just one of those sorts of things where it's like, you know, is for all of the flaws that the App Store system might have had from a, you know, pick your sort of favorite thing that people will complain about.
Yeah.
Is it sort of a you know, better sort of situation than you would have if you truly did remove those guardrails?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in Picard season 4, the Borg take over the world by getting people to sideload an app, right?
Spoilers.
It writes itself, Mark. It's got to be the Borg and it's got to be them taking over the world again, or taking over the Federation, I guess.
Well, we've got more worries about ChatGPT than the Borg right now.
That's true. Well, the Borg is ChatGPT.
Well, that's
right?
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool. So what do we think about? So Mac OS 14, we're not really, like, what could they possibly stage manager version 2? I don't know, what, another try at that one. What do we expect on the Mac other than some cool new widgety thing in the maps or in the mail app or something, right? Photos.
I mean, you know what the folks in Redmond are doing is they're taking their investments in OpenAI, the company, right, and the ChatGPT product, and they're bolting it right into the operating system. It's a little panel that will run on the side and contextually understand what you're doing and say, oh, are you, it's kind of like, you know, Clippy 2.0, right? It's like, oh, it looks like you're in Microsoft Word. I can help you write that resume, right? I can turn this, set of meeting notes into PowerPoint slides. And Google's doing something kind of similar-ish when it comes to, you know, using Google Workspace, Google Docs, Google Search, et cetera. Will Apple do that sort of thing eventually? I think they will. I just don't think it's this year. And I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to have Siri GPT do, you know, way more cool things, especially because the integration sort of top to bottom is way better in the Apple ecosystem than any other ecosystem out there.
Yeah, what do you think it would happen? Because you're right, that's a really good point, is the GPT sort of side of everyone wondering what Apple's going to do. We're not really talking about it much. We're not really reading about it. But I'm sure that if they don't do something related to what I'm going to do, air quotes here, and call it AI, then, because I mean, like maybe in the photo, I mean, they are doing some machine learning in the Photos app, because I know the Photos app gets smarter every time I update my phone, right? And like it finding things. And you know, like the other day I was walking along with the dog, and I had my camera open, and it created a box around Mac and said, look, it's a dog. And I went, no, yes, it is a dog. Thank you very much, phone, for telling me that. But what do you think would, like, because like I said, Microsoft has bought this Edge thing. And Mark Moykins that we talked about, I talked about on a couple of episodes ago, he talked about how he was trying the Edge beta browser. And it had the ChatGPT in the side, and he was asking it to show him how to use a certain framework that was not documented, right? He had to tweak it a little bit. He had to, prompt it, obviously, which is what I don't know if the P is prompt, but it's prompt programming, basically. And he corrected it, and he finally got it to write some decent code for him, right? So, and he did that right inside. I think he was using Visual Studio Code or something like that. But do you think Apple there will be like a panel in Xcode or something, or... What do you think Apple will do, or do they need to? They really need to do something AI-ish.
I kind of don't think Apple will do that kind of thing. It's not their style thing. I could be wrong, but it's not their kind of thing. I mean, first of all, AI is—it's not AI, right? None of this
is not artificial intelligence. Right. Yeah, that's why I did the air quotes. Yeah.
Right. I couldn't see you do the air quotes.
I spoke the air quotes.
Spoke the air quotes. I mean, ChatGPT and all the stuff gets a lot of hype, and it is an important thing. But I think it's getting more hype than it really deserves right now, because this is not a, how do I say this? These large language models, they've been around for a long time. They've just gotten really better, a lot better. And maybe they're hockey sticking up in the quality, but it's not like a revolutionary thing. It's not like they've become sentient and come alive, right? It's not, they haven't. It's just, they've just become really good at pretending to be something that actually communicates. It doesn't really communicate. Now, yeah, a lot of people are talking about using it as a tool for writing code, where you like GitHub has that thing, but I'm hearing people are getting mixed results with that, right? There are people, you hear if you ask it to do a very specific small thing, it can do it, yeah. But you get this hallucination problem where it just comes up with something that just completely doesn't apply to what you're doing, and so for that reason, I don't think Apple would build that into Xcode, because it would look bad, right? If Xcode is giving you the wrong stuff, giving you bad stuff. And Apple is the platform, is the ecosystem, then that looks bad. It's a whole different story if ChatGPT or OpenAI does it. They're not the ones who are, behind the whole platform and propping up, holding up the platform.
Well, speaking of improvements, like last year they came out with, the Swift Playgrounds, Swift Playgrounds 4, I believe. You can use it to actually author an entire app, right? And publish it to the App Store. I mean, do you think that I'm not going to go out on a limb and say I think we'll probably get an upgrade to that in terms of like what it could do, right? Like maybe it'll be able to roll in some of these frameworks that we're talking about that it doesn't do. I don't think we ever checked it, but I don't think it does core data, for example, right?
And it doesn't do, it can't do third party frameworks at all, as far as I know, right?
Yeah, I wonder if we can do Swift Package.
Well, maybe it can do Swift Package. That I don't know. That's a good question.
Hmm. But yeah, I mean, so, because I mean, that's the thing is, and you know, it's generally speaking, Swift UI, right? So, Swift, I guess. I don't know. I've played around with it a little bit, but I haven't touched it in months. But,
well, that's the problem. I kind of wonder if that many people really are using it, right? Was it a novelty? Yeah, they came up with this thing and it was kind of cool. People played with it, and maybe it's good for learning for beginners, but. You know, is anyone reusing it for real production stuff? I don't know. I wonder. I kind of doubt it. I don't. But maybe.
Yeah. What else did we get? Like, last year we got charts. We got Swift charts. What do you?
Oh,
think
we got charts.
Get?
Yeah.
We got the Swift charts thing, and that was pretty cool. Another thing I tried for a little bit and never really got off. For me, never got off the ground. Although, you know, I work in a company now where you know we chart everything all the time, right? But. Yeah, I kind of wonder, like, maybe where could they take that? What's missing? Pie charts or something?
Well, there's a ton of things missing from charts. Charts was not a very complete charting library at all. It could do some things, and it did those pretty well, but it could not do any really sophisticated, highly complicated charts. So if they care about that, I don't know. I kind of don't expect they'll do that much with that, because really what that was, I feel like I'm being negative about everything here, but what that was they had this, I forget, was it Research Kit or whatever it was? It was one of their other frameworks that used the charts. So they made charts available to everyone because they had to build this technology anyway. But was it really that big of a thing? I mean, how many people, certainly plenty of people put charts in apps, but compared to how many apps are out there, are there that many charts? Was it really that big of a thing? I remember being surprised last year about how big a deal they were making out of charts when it's just a charts library. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, it's got the magic appeal to it, I guess, right? So,
yeah.
Well, let's switch gears here and talk about the hardware that's supposed to be coming. Like, they're talking about an Apple Silicon Mac Pro. I think the Mac Pro is the last machine right now that's still running Intel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So they're talking about it's going to be like an M2 Ultra.
Or an M3. I thought I saw something about an M3.
Are we getting M3s this time around?
I don't know.
We're getting end of the year or something like that, I heard.
I don't know. Didn't they? They've been announcing the new chip at WWDC, right? Didn't they announce the M2 at last year's WWDC?
They did, yeah. But I had heard from the rumor mill that M3 is coming later this year or early next year.
Yeah, don't know.
Let me just see if I can get. But anyway, so yeah, I think my point was that the currently the most expensive Mac on the docket is still running Intel, and it's the last one to sort of get it. And according to Mark Gurman, it's going to be an M2 Ultra chip in this thing with 96 gigabytes of unified memory, probably, right?
Yeah. Or more.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a pro machine, you're going to want more than 96.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Yeah, but apparently, according to this thing here, not the RAM's not going to be upgradable, right? It's just a paragraph here. Likely and will not feature user upgradable RAM. I guess that's probably because it's tied to the M2 chip. That's kind of the way that Apple Silicons are running these days, right?
Yeah, we haven't had user upgradable RAM for years.
Yeah, true. So, yeah, the big cheese grater is going to hopefully see an upgrade because we got the Studio, the last year. And then the new one that they're talking about, and I don't personally, as I love the MacBook Air, it's my format of choice. I like the 13-inch size. My wife still has the 11-inch that she uses occasionally. But they're talking about a 15-inch MacBook Air. I guess it kind of competes. It's a price point lower than the 14. I don't understand why you would need this. And again, if it doesn't have four USB ports, because my one complaint about my M1 MacBook Air is I've only got two USBs, and I'm constantly looking for a third port. So what do you guys think about a MacBook Air? Like, what could they possibly do to make that worth? I mean, I guess it's a consumer-level device. Is that why?
You mean, why would they make a 15-inch as opposed to what the existing one? Just a bigger screen and light. You know, people still like big screens.
True. It's true. Yeah, I guess it's not a pro machine. It's not that heavy base. And I guess it gives them more space for battery, according to this article here, which will give it a little bit more time, a little bit more runtime, right, on the battery. Mm-hmm. You're watching video and stuff. So, Anyway, we'll see. We'll see. I don't think we're getting any other pros like the Mac Pros, MacBook Pros. And who knows what kind of iMac we're going to get. Maybe a polka dot iMac this year? Or 27-inch? A lot of people are asking for 27 inches, like you said, right? I'm going to go out on a limb and predict a 27-inch iMac.
All right.
That's my prediction. My out-of-the-blue prediction. Okay, so the elephant in the room is two things. One is, this was leaked like months ago, XROS, which is the Reality Pro device that we're talking about, and XROS. And this article came out today that I got linked in the show notes about the specs. I mean, not that the specs really never really mean much at Apple, because they always have some sort of way of surprising and delighting us beyond the specifications. But they're saying micro LED screen technology. They're saying it's a 1.4-inch display, I guess two of them possibly, 400 pixels per inch, and 5,000 nits of brightness, which is almost like daylight. And I guess you wear it on your face, and it's your 3D VR, UAR headset of some type, right?
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how much is it. Is it VR? Is it AR? I mean, and how much does it cost? I think is the key thing here.
Yeah.
Because you can buy, how much does a Oculus cost now? $500 maybe?
Well, it says Quest 2 and Quest Pro. I don't know what those, maybe Jaime can help me out with it. But so there's $349 and to $299 for, mm-hmm. Is Quest 2 an Oculus, Jaime?
Are you there? I'm trying to remember how they changed branding. Oculus Quest Store. So I believe, yeah.
Okay, I just went over to Amazon and it takes me to
Oculus Go, Oculus Quest 2, Oculus Rift, or a quick store.
It says Meta Quest Pro. So Meta's device is the Quest Pro. And Quest 2, does Meta own Oculus?
They do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's yeah, they're calling some places are calling it, there's Oculus Quest All-in-One VR, there's Quest 2 Elite Strap for enhanced support, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, it's the PlayStation one, right? Yeah, it's, I mean, interesting to see what it's going to look like and what it's going to do.
Yeah, the fact that it's taken so long to come out sets the bar pretty high, I think. So this thing, it better be awesome for the amount of time it's taken and the premium price they're going to charge. It better be awesome. But maybe it is. Maybe that's why it's taken so long. They didn't want to release it until they had something that really was awesome. Kind of the old Steve Jobs approach.
So that's an interesting thing. I was talking about this with some colleagues at work. They were surprised to hear the $3,000 estimated cost, which is what everybody's saying. But I mean, I kind of wonder, like, if Apple's going to pull a fast one. They've done this to us before, where we're expecting somebody to come in at a really high price. And then they say $749 for the 4-gig model, you know?
Yeah.
Starting at, right? So do you think it's going to land at $3,000 or?
I don't know. They got to be realistic. I mean,
The technology?
With the competition that's out there and people are feeling, you know, their pocketbooks are kind of tight these days, a lot of people. So I don't know.
Mm. What do you think, Jaime?
I am one of those people who kind of wonders if the $3,000 mark, price mark, is another iPad. If like, it's going to be $1 billion. Oh, $499, you know. I'm not saying it's going to be as low $499, but if you're mentally anchored on a price point of $3,000, because that's what the interwebs have been saying for months, and then it comes out at $1,500, suddenly it feels like half off, right? It's still pretty pricey. It's still very substantial, but it suddenly feels a lot cheaper than it, less expensive than it was.
So it's interesting. Why are they talking about iPhone 17 and iPhone 16? Or we're on iPhone 14 now, right?
iOS 17.
No, I'm looking at this article here from 9to5 Mac talking about iPhone 16 Pro and 16 Pro Max, talking about screens.
Is it because they're talking way out in the future? If like, sure, the new device is about to come out, but the year after that.
Yeah. You know. If those same people that want sideloaded Mac apps read this article, they're not going to buy a phone this year. They'll wait for the 16 to come out, you know? Oh, 15 Pro Max and 16 Ultra, they're calling it, I guess. That's the prediction. And it's going to be a 6.9-inch screen versus a 6.7-inch Pro Max. So is that the big screen size now? I've lost track of screen sizes, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I have too.
We need more size classes. Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay. And the one they're talking about iPhone 17 already too. Like, holy cow. Why would you buy a phone this year? Interesting.
I mean, the problem with some of these future prognostications is Apple might be legitimately testing out something interesting. Like, it's got a foldable screen and you can make origami out of it, you know, kind of thing. that never actually ships. And they could also be doing things that are like, hey, remember how USB-C's like 5 years ago? Probably the iPhone. And it may actually happen this year, but maybe not as well.
Oh, USB on the phone. Wow. Apple has big plans for display technology used in upcoming iPhone models, according to a new roadmap shared by analyst Ross Young. So they're talking about...
That's at least a year away then. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Wow, the rumor mill is really firing up, really. Speaking of rumor mills, did you guys hear the story about how Apple caught one of their leakers?
I heard something about that. The sibling outed their sister, I think.
Sibling, yeah, they fed somebody some false information to narrow down on who was the leaker, and sure enough, within like a day or so of the information being handed to this person, their sibling published it.
Oops.
Yeah, so they were sent packing. Yeah, oops.
Ending your sibling's career for the clicks.
Well, yeah, no, you kind of wonder what do you put on your resume if you're that person and you want to find your next job, right? Welcome to Burger King's drive-thru. Can I take your order, please?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the only thing I have in the notes here, and I wasn't sure if I put this here or Jaime, or you put this, but the high yield Apple high yield savings account. I don't think, did we talk about that? Did that come up after the last show?
What would you like to know about it, Tim?
I know nothing about it because I live in Canada. We don't have these fancy, you know,
Canada,
fintech things.
Before, Canada. Your Apple card used to be connected to an Apple Cash account, which was nice. You know, you could say, hey.
So it's like wallet kind of idea.
Like a little source of funds, a little pocket of money. You could say, hey, I'd like to send somebody a dollar, or I'd like to have somebody to send me some money. But it never really earned any interesting sort of, you know, interest. The new Apple Card the Apple High Yield Savings Account has a 4.15% APY. I'm not going to call it the absolute top tier, but it's pretty up there, especially at the time it released. There's others who have tried to follow suit and be higher, but it's connected to your Apple Card, so now you can... it took like 30 seconds to sign up for this thing. It was super easy to enroll. One click or one tap, transfer your funds from your Apple Cash account over to the savings account.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a little nice thing here that goes up and to the right. So like, you know, same sort of things of 1% if you swipe your physical titanium card, 2% if you use Apple Pay through like your phone or your watch, and 3% if you are doing things that are special partners like Uber and Nike, Panera, that sort of stuff.
Or Apple itself. Any money you spend Apple, you get 3%.
Yeah, and then you'll get weird random things like, I think it's over now, but there was a promotion for like 6% off with Nike. Actually, there's a promotion right now. Share up to $125 with your family. So Apple Card Family lets you add up to 5 new users onto your Apple Card account. So like, you know, your spouse, your kids, etc. And if each of those users spends $25 in their first 30 days, you will receive $25 daily cash back. So they're pushing for some interesting stuff here. Some folks will poo-poo some reasonable things, like it's kind of weird that it's tied to a credit card, which I don't think is unreasonable as a starting point. It doesn't have a web presence. You can't log into it elsewhere. People are like, oh, what if I switch phones? Well, ACH transfers exist, and you can. It has a legit account number, and it has a legit routing number. So that you would do in the U.S. is you can pull from it or push to it if you want.
It was incredibly easy. One of the first things I did was transferred a fairly big chunk of money from one of my other accounts that was making still like 0.1%, you know, to one of these giant banks. I moved a bunch over into this account, and it was really easy. I mean, it took 10 seconds and took maybe a day before it cleared, and it was there earning much higher interest.
Cool.
No brainer.
Do you have to be a citizen of the United States to open one of these accounts? Like,
I don't know if you have to be a citizen. I mean, presumably you have to have an account at a U.S. bank.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have to be a citizen.
So I believe California state law would require that they have a resident alien. So green card folks should be able to get it. So it wouldn't be strictly citizen, but you would have to
be. That's what I mean. Like you have to
be a person of the U.S.
I couldn't go on a vacation. I couldn't go down to Cupertino next week and open a bank account, is what I'm saying, and then get one of these cards.
Doubtful.
Because my Apple ID is working.
U.S. Be non-citizen, non-resident of the U.S.
Yeah, I'd be an alien.
Not a lawyer, not a migration expert, go check for that.
But I got money in my account. Yeah, you got to let me into the country. All right, so here, let's play a little game. This is called WWDC Bingo Card, and we need to fill out our bingo card. What are we going to see on Monday in either the keynote or the State of the Union? Like, what are your predictions? I mean, the free square in the middle is going to be more emojis.
Oh, I thought the free square was good morning from Tim Cook.
Well, yeah, I guess that could be one too.
We can't, we can't wait to see what you do. We're excited to see what you do with this.
Well, no,
thing
I don't mean that. I mean technology. Like we know we're going to see Craig Federighi running somewhere or something, or transporting somehow, right? We'll go down into the vault with the guy who builds the logic boards and stuff, right?
Did they ever do the blood ox in the Apple Watch? Did that ever happen?
Yes, blood ox. Yes, but not blood sugar or other things that people have been hoping for.
Yeah, well, blood diabetes. Sugar. Yeah, I think you have to actually puncture the skin for that, right? So
yeah,
they're not going to do that in an Apple Watch. I don't know.
Well, are we going to see an improvement to the Ultra? Are we going to see a phone that or a watch that approaches the Ultra look, perhaps?
At DubDub, I don't think those kind of devices will make their appearance. They might do like a, here's like a cheaper watch, right?
Yeah.
Sort of thing with the premium, new hotness around the time of September to October will be, new iPhone, new iPad Pro, I think is due.
Hmm.
If they announce something like a Mac Pro, it probably isn't actually available till the fall. So I think here, in terms of devices, man, I hem and haw because it's been so many years we've said this. I think they will have the premiere of the headset. So there's been a lot of rumor mill. The criminology of the invitation says Code New Worlds, which could be ARKit. We at 3 or 4 or 5.0, whatever version would be on. It could also be like, yep, here's the developer edition or prototype or whatever. We're announcing it here because right now we're submitting to the electronics regulation industry. It's on the back of the phone, right?
IEEE.
No. The one that says, oh, they don't physically put it on the phones anymore. Mark, you know what I'm talking about?
Underwriter Limited? UL? Listing?
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now it's like, all right, here you go. Here's the specs for like how much power it's going to pull from the wall and et cetera. So like the stuff that they wouldn't want to, submit all the regulatory type documents and listings. And I think similar to iPhone, it's like, hey, here's the announcement and it will be available in the fall, except for possibly these developer kits, like the way they were going to do for the Apple TV.
So this raises an interesting question then. So the last couple of hardware things that Apple has put out were the Apple Watch and the TV, and I'm not even counting the HomePod because that didn't have any developer kit. But the watch and the TV, they were launched with some hype about developerness and they never really caught on, right? Do we think that the headset will catch on as a developer platform?
Well, that's what the whole XROS is supposedly
about, right? But do we think from, so, okay. So Apple kind of can't these days, I don't think they can put out a new platform like this without some kind of developer support. They just kind of have to, right? It's expected, and it would be conspicuous in its absence. But like, if they had put out the phone and there was no way to develop on the phone, the watch. If they had put out the watch and there was no way to develop on the watch, people would have complained left and right. But like we were saying earlier, who's actually doing development on the watch these days? So Apple has to put out some kind of kit. But do we think that, other than an initial spike of novelty interest, do we think it'll catch on as a developer device? It's sort of hard to be like an indie developer developing AR or VR stuff. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's hard.
What's the killer app? What's the point?
Yeah. It's very hard. And the reason the iPhone took off, obviously, was because everyone could just write their own little app. But I wonder.
Well, they do have Reality Kit. I did an article when I was at Apple on that, which is basically, it's like you can send in a 3D object and then you can animate it and then create an experience. Like that's what they do with those invitations where you hold your, or they like, you want to see what the next device looks like on your desk.
Yes.
AR.
They do have it. And people are doing it. You know, my previous company, we had an AR app. A bunch of my former colleagues from my company spun off their own AR company to do a new AR app. People are doing it. But I think there's not a lot of people doing it. I think a lot of people will play with it.
Like, there won't be a Paul Hudson book on this.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's not mainstream, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they certainly have to have, you know, so like IKEA had that nice demo, AR demo. Apple needs to have a developer kit for companies like that who are going to invest in that kind of thing. But is it something that the average everyday developer cares about? I guess what is the average everyday developer anymore? That's actually another question, but maybe a question for another day.
I think there's probably a couple different ways I could approach this. So I see a path forward from a technology standpoint to lower the floor and make it easier for the, you know, student type developer to do something cool and the indie studios to do something really awesome. And of course, the AAA type development shops to do incredible stuff. Depends on a bunch of things from a technology standpoint, but you've got SceneKit, you've got ARKit. If you are willing to broach the topic of generative fill like Adobe Firefly, etc., and in fact, maybe even push that over to Adobe, be like, oh, look, Adobe, we've partnered with you. I've got this interesting little Hot Wheels car type thing. Can you fill a racetrack for me in, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse style? Make that the style of Super Mario. Make it the style of, you know, Fast and the Furious, et cetera, right? So that people are doing Star Trek The Next Generation, asking the holodeck to create a table. No, a little bit wider. No, made out of metal instead of wood. That sort of thing. Instead of directly programming. From addressing the will developers care, I think Apple TV, tvOS and watchOS, there were some pretty critical business mistakes that Apple made that I don't fully understand. So from a business perspective, for no known reason that I'm aware of, Apple said you can't charge for watch apps because... Why should you be paid for your work?
Right.
It has to be Apple
to an iPhone app. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be a free, very expensive feature add to your iPhone app. You can't sell a watch app. You can't unblock.
Even the standalone ones. Even the standalone apps?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. Like, I'm sure full faith and credit to somebody somewhere at Apple had a really good thought as to how that was going to work, but... they missed, right? They whiffed really bad on that. And the consequence is there aren't really major apps of consequence that are not from Apple. That's not to mean that there aren't good ones. People do make some brilliant ones, but it's like, oh, good. There's like a community of 20 people who make some interesting apps. And beyond that, the millions of developers are completely uninterested in watchOS because you can't make money, right? So the other one is tvOS, where this one was a little less bad. I do think that Apple got hit by the fact that maybe TVs aren't the place for apps, right? It's really for content. It's for watching Ted Lasso. It's for watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It's for watching whatever Max is calling itself today. from a actual apps you could have built on there, not talking about productivity, but switching into games, I think they really... made a terrible business decision by not offering a way to say you can require an actual controller, like a Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation type controller for these. I think they tried so hard to make it, oh, no, you can just use the Siri remote for every game. It's like, well, cool. Like, Crossy Road is great. Halo is
but,
not going to
but
be
try
Fortnite
to play Tears
expected.
Of the Kingdom on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they just said, like, hey, this entire huge class of games can never be a success because it's just absolutely not worth your time.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that I don't understand. They were purely business mistakes. They had nothing to do with technology. They had nothing to do with, oh man, like the, you know, the state of the world. Just when it was just Apple doing something weird, hopefully for good reasons, but it just didn't work out.
And to this day, there is no web interface on tvOS still. You can't, there's no concept, there's no browser on tvOS. There's no, you can't put a web view in your tvOS app still.
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
It's a weird thing.
So I think from a sort of, I can't predict what Apple will do, Mark, but I think if Apple is like, oh yeah, you can't charge for XROS because it's tied to your iPhone, it's like they'll just, they just carpet bombed the entire industry and said, yep, complete waste of your time unless you're a very small handful of niche folks.
Yep.
So hopefully they will say you can absolutely charge. You know what? You want to charge $1,000 for your awesome app or game? Go for it. Up to you. You want to make it freemium and it's a horrific nightmare of casino and loot boxes and etc. Go for it. Like, I think letting it actually be open and let the best practices win, let the best models win, would be better, I think, than the squelching of opportunity that they did with tvOS and watchOS.
Yeah.
Well, this headset and this AR VR technology is going to be Tim Cook's legacy, right? Like do we credit him with the watch?
Well,
you know, Tim, it's in the eye of the beholder. He is the least successful multi-trillion dollar market cap CEO that anyone has ever encountered.
Tim Cook's legacy is a $1 trillion market cap that Apple had at one point, right? Okay. Not any given product. Tim Cook was never a product guy. He's an operations guy. I'm not sure what it is today. I don't think it's $1 trillion anymore, although NVIDIA
Google says it's $2.79 trillion market cap. Is that right?
Apple, really? Oh, it went
up. Because NVIDIA is just about, they just did, NVIDIA just did crack the trillion.
Paying attention. Well, okay, even more so then. It's a $3 trillion market cap for Tim Cook. He can take a lot of credit for that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Microsoft at $2.44 trillion.
Look at that. Wow.
Alphabet at $1.56 trillion. Oh, NVIDIA slid down. NVIDIA is no longer in the, what is it?
How's the IT guy market cap doing? About the same as Mapsoft.
Yeah, pretty much. I had somebody actually say he wanted to buy the company the other day. I'm like, are you kidding? And he said, yeah, I guess I am.
Well, you should have asked him how much he would offer. You know, just
Glenn Howard
just occurred to me is that this is the 10-year anniversary of Swift.
It's also, are we 20? Our own 10-year anniversary, or we're 9?
2014?
It was 2014. Yeah,
2014.
That we started.
We've started.
Well, Swift came out 2014 as well, Mark,
right?
Right.
And what's even more scary to think about, for me at least, is that the approximate lifespan of Objective-C on the iPhone was about 5 years, and Swift has been around 10 years.
5 years for? Oh, I guess so. Yeah,
I mean, Objective-C was around for a long time before that, but the iPhone came out in roughly 2009, right?
Yeah. Well, Jaime's always predicted 10-year life cycle. That's kind of how he and I met, right?
Yeah, 10-year cycle. That's why I'm like, what is it?
This
next thing.
This kind of, we're back in the show, I guess, but this kind of is reflected in the fact that, you know, we have these WWDCs every year, and I've been noticing this for the past couple of years, is that it's not that exciting anymore, you know?
It's a job, like you said the other day, right?
Well, I'm talking about WWDC, but iOS development in general. Yeah. But yeah, WWDC, it's just another iteration. It's just an evolution. There's nothing really magic. Well, we'll see about the headset, but back, remember back in the days, we'd all just pore over those videos of just how to do a scroll view right. Remember?
Yeah.
Those days are long gone. You never see that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I think we need that next cycle. The web had a couple of them. Mobile smacked in to there. Lots of money thrown at mobile. Mobile was a thing you could directly charge for. We thought it was wearables, watches. It's not. We thought, could it be TV stuff? No, it's not. Is it going to be a headset? To be seen, TBD. Give it a while after this headset releases and see what happens. The AI, or, since it's not Skynet, we're talking large language models like ChatGPT and Bard and stuff. Maybe, even though it's difficult to charge directly for that, and monetization is still kind of Wild West, but everybody is sprinkling LLM stuff somehow into their product. So at least for now, it's a big thing.
What did you say, LLM?
Large language models.
Large language models, LLMs.
Yep. Like ChatGPT.
That's why they choose cute names like Llama. And other things. There's so many of these things cropping up.
To me, I hate to say it, but it feels a lot like crypto did a year or two ago, where, yes, there is something to it. There is some reality to it, but it's so hyped that 90% of what's out there is nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel the same way about the large language models. We'll see.
It could be. I guess the good thing is that, unlike crypto, it doesn't really need to involve like two individuals to be useful. It doesn't necessarily need a network effect of like, hey, I have all this Jaime coin. Cool. Does anybody else have any? No. Can I do it again? Absolutely not. Right. I need at least one other person involved to trade with or do something with. Whereas at least these large language models, I'm like, oh, I can. Make a recipe out of like what can you make like Iron Chef style. It's like, what can I make tonight with hot sauce, ramen noodles, dog biscuits? it's still independently useful there. So pretty astutely there, I think he's pointed out that like there's definitely a lot of hype here, and there's a lot of people throwing .ai onto their names, machine learning onto their stuff, bolting in some way of like, hey, what if we have a terrible UI, but you could just use this chat box to ask it a question, which I think has led a lot of people say, like, why can't we bolt the Amazon Echo or the Google Home or Siri and HomePod to this thing and just front it? I mean, they're really just translating text into voice and voice into text, right?
Yeah. Now, I will be proven wrong when you can say to ChatGPT, design for me a fully immersive 3D virtual reality system that I can run on my Apple headset, and it just works. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our picks. Do you guys have any picks? I got a bunch.
I don't have any picks.
I've got two, one of which I'm going to donate and gift to Mark.
All right, well, hang on. Before we get there, let me just go through these. So I found this is one that has been on our show notes for a while. This is a list of awesome iOS books. Just waiting for it to load here. It's a Medium article and a screenshot, of a lot of things about from Ray Wunderlich Group or from some Codico, I should say. But yeah, he's got a list of, books for iOS books for beginners. There are some Objective-C books here, some Swift books. If you're looking for learning materials on functional or UI or architecture, scroll on over to this. He's going to have ARKit stuff too. That's from Crystal Language. That's another Ray Wunderlich one. But, check it out if you want to find out some stuff. I'll have a link in the show notes for that one. As I mentioned earlier, I did capture this link here. I don't know why I was looking for it earlier, but the link to sign up for WWDC events is open. That opened today. So if you want to get into the Slack channels to ask and participate in labs, you can go ahead and start registering for that stuff today. And I'm just opening the link. I believe it's today until the they don't open till the day after. Yeah, from 6th to the 9th is when the sessions are running. But you can register today using your Apple ID, developer ID, I should say.
Live near WWDC is the James Dempsey and the Breakpoints event, which is supporting women who write code or women who code. Tickets for that, I'll have a link here in the show notes for buying those tickets. I think the VIP sessions are already sold out, so check that out. A non WWDC event here I have listed is SwiftTO is going to be in August, and I am now participating not as a speaker but as a volunteer on there, and you'll see over the next couple of weeks I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with some of the speakers from SwiftTO, so stay tuned for those. And I talked about the Flighty app at the top of the show, so I'll pass over to Jaime for his stuff.
Yeah, first one here is insidesticker.com. So I know you all didn't necessarily come from the Windows side of the house, but you know what we used to have on those great Windows PCs? We used to have that reliable Intel Inside, wonderful, you know, bejeweled, bedazzled sticker. And then, you know, your MacBook Pro is pretty nice and clean, but wouldn't it look cool with like an M1 Pro Inside or an M2 Max Inside on there? If you feel like that's the thing you want to do for the low price of looks like $16 US, you too can get a sticker that you can proudly display on your MacBook.
So it's a physical sticker, not a sticker that in messages. Remember those?
I believe it is
are
a
still
physical
around?
Sticker.
Yeah, stickers are still around.
Sticker packs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still around.
That was another year of not much going on at WWDC, so we'll talk about sticker packs. Anyway,
yeah, so the 1990,
they're $19.99 Canadian for the stickers, which I suspect that's where the pricing comes from, Jaime.
It's a pack of three, by the way.
Yeah, so $7.99 will get you a single sticker of each one, so and then probably there'll be shipping on top of that. So
the next one is one I'm gifting to Mark because I feel like it's going to be his jam here. So this is the ARM manga guide to the Mali GPU. So
I have no idea what this is.
If you know, Mark can use his off the cuff. He can use his his knowledge to face off against Dr. ARM, the mobile GPU expert character in this. They kind of explain, you know, through the visual art style, Japanese manga art style of like, here's how GPUs work, and more specifically, the Mali GPU. From ARM.
That's cool.
I'm reading it.
It's basically like a power station. And then the master vertex shaders and master fragment shaders, there's like a conveyor belt between them. Hmm. If you don't believe me, there you can take a look at this. It's kind of interesting. It's cute as a way to make an analogy to explain this, you know, technical concept.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week and another WWDC until next week when we will do our after the keynote episode. If people want to get in touch with you, Jaime, how would they do that?
I'm on Twitter as @devofthehair.
All right. And Mark, if people want to get in touch with you?
MarkR@snapsoft.com.
Well, they can send you a cursive letter, right?
Yeah. Pony Express.
Well, my name, as usual, is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine and on the Mastodon. Nobody sent me an invite to, what's the new one? Blue Sky. I haven't got one yet. So, you know, if you feel the love, send it over. Yeah, until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. Please leave a comment on the website, and if you can, please write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is @MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.
So have you guys caught up on the Ted Lasso finale today?
No, I haven't watched this season at all.
Mm. Oh yeah, you can binge now. All the episodes available, ten of them.
You know what I did do for that is Succession. I just finished that. Mm-hmm.
Did you watch it from the beginning, or had you been watching it?
The previous seasons I watched in the past, but this season I timed it perfectly. So I binged it, you know, watching a couple of episodes a night until I was just at the finale, and I finished like the episode before, the day before the finale. So it was perfect timing. Now I'm binging Yellow Jackets. I have two episodes left of Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, I watched that one. Yeah.
Don't spoil it, because that one's not done.
No, I haven't seen Succession, so I'll trade you for Yellow Jackets. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just finished watching the finale of Yellow Jackets the other day. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's an interesting one too. And then I've been watching The White House Plumbers.
I haven't watched that.
My dad has binged the when the Watergate hearings were on. My dad, that's all he watched, and used to drive us crazy. I hated it, right? But so I kind of know all the players, because you know it was kind of drilled into our all that was on TV for the longest time, right? And so now I'm getting to see the sort of the story behind it. So it's interesting. But yeah, I went and saw the Blackberry movie a couple of weekends ago. So it's the story about Jim Lazaridis and Balsillie, the people that started Blackberry here in Waterloo. Yeah. So, and all about the technology. And I spoke to one of my friends who used to work there, and he sort of said, well, they took a little bit of license with the story. But mm-hmm. yeah, but it's entertaining. It's entertaining. It definitely.
Yeah.
The guy who plays Jim Balsillie is unrecognizable. He's one of the actors from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah, which actor? Yeah,
the blonde one, right?
Okay.
I don't really know.
Dennis, so the brother.
Dennis, yeah.
You know, there's brother and sister, Dennis and Dee.
Yeah.
Oh, there's brother and sister. Those two. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's there's the three. Is it three people that own the thing, and then she showed up and. And they got Danny DeVito for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah,
Danny DeVito just kind of showed up out of nowhere, but it was great.
Yeah.
Wait, Dennis the same one who was in Mythic Quest? Or was that a different guy?
Have you seen
the guy?
Oh man, he plays a high school teacher who doesn't care. What's the name of that show? AP Bio, I think. Have you seen that?
I've seen that one. Anyway, yeah.
What's it called? AP Bio?
I think the show is called AP Bio. It's the actor.
Was that like a Community kind of thing?
I could see it being kind of like that.
It's on Peacock.
Oh, Peacock. Before I forget, it looks like Blackberry has really good ratings on Rotten Tomato. It's 98% and 92%
It's very
critics and audience.
Very entertaining. Yeah, they got smacked on the side of the head when the iPhone came out. Surprisingly.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you remember, but the iPhone didn't really take off in the first year or so, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember a lot of people were like, oh, no physical keyboard. I'll never use it. I'll never give up my BlackBerry. And guess what?
Yeah.
10 years later,
well,
where are we?
I'll be honest. I think probably for like a month or two, I had an iPhone and the BlackBerry. And yeah, I was like, you know, really struggling to say, okay, I'm going to stop using the BlackBerry, right? Because, the keyboard was, I mean, the worst part about the keyboard is if you were driving, you could type, right?
Mm.
You know, because you could just have it in one hand and just be typing. And it was horrible, like super accident prone, right?
You know, just a
Glenn Howard. Yep.
The Cure
is coming up in 2 weeks. We're just talking about Mark.
Sorry, say it again.
The Cure is coming up in 2 weeks.
Oh, concert? Yeah.
Yeah, the band.
The Cure. Yeah. I'm going to see Ringo in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Cool.
So that'll be fun.
Who's he got with him?
Lukather still. He's got the guy from Men at Work still.
Yes.
He doesn't have Greg Raleigh anymore, the guy from Santana, which is too bad because they did that pretty well, the Santana songs. I'm not sure who else, so I'll have to look it up.
Hmm. What were you going to say, Jaime?
Swift T.O. or Swift 2? How is that conference pronounced?
T.O.
T.O.
Swift Toronto. Yeah, that's like what was.
There's, you don't say T-Dot. Yeah.
There was another Canadian conference that had a T-O in it, right?
Same one.
Oh, is that the same one? Okay.
Oh, no. We used to have NS North.
Yeah, NS North. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
But it was only one. They only did one in Toronto. They mostly were in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
The last one they did was in Montreal. But
So are you going to say how many? Swift.io?
Starts in a few months, right? Looks like their website says August 10th and 11th at the 10th.
You got your ticket yet, Jaime?
No, I won't. I won't be attending. I've actually got other preparations leading into the end of the month of August that I have to do. So
secret
as
stuff?
as much as it would be, nothing secret. It's FinTech DevCon is coming up at the end of August.
I thought, that's you were not getting married or something.
Nothing. Nothing like that.
Adopting more another like Chihuahua, yeah.
No, and it's not like I'm even presenting or anything, but the old jobby job, there's a fair number of us that are going to be in attendance, so there's a lot of planning that goes even to just that, and how do we make as big of a show and big of a statement as possible, given we're not even going to have any, an exhibitor's booth.
Right.
A lot of stuff behind the scenes that goes into that, so it's just really rough timing for Swift.io. Looks like we got a pretty good set of speakers coming up too. A lot of folks I recognize.
Yeah, they got some big heavy hitters too. But I just kind of got volunteered into. I offered to since I was looking for some airtime. I was looking for some people that show up on our show. So I volunteered to. I offered to interview the speakers as sort of a way to raise attention about the show, about the conference, and. Now I'm involved in it. They're like, oh yeah, you should join our thing and you can volunteer and maybe do some emceeing and whatever. I'm like, okay, sure. They didn't pick my talk, which is I'm still a little missed. But
this is a consolation prize. Yeah. You get to be the MC.
I don't even remember what talk I put in. I had three or four different subjects I was putting into conferences. But yeah, it's kind of like it's one of these things where I think I don't know. I don't think they want graybeards talking at their conferences these days anymore, Mark. Mm. Although Daniel Steinberg is you're older than me. He's speaking.
It's a murderer's row here. So Daniel Steinberg, Guillermo Rambo, Chris Ida, Summer Penang. Who else have I got here? It's more TBA. It's just like, whoa, that is. Is it a multi-track conference or single track over the 2 days?
No, it's single.
Yeah, so that just reduces your possibilities, right? Like, it's probably like 16 talks all in at most. Looking at a schedule of like morning talks don't start until 9:45. You have a lunch break. You have afternoon talks. The conference party is at 4:00. I'm like, I can do the math. It's like 8 on the first day, 8 on the second day, keynotes, etc. Like that was a tough one.
Yeah, Frank Corville talked last time. So I spoke at this conference in 2019. So Frank was there as well. And then Terry Lanaville, he's another Toronto developer. So, isn't that, I don't know how to say her, Yui Nguyen? Is that somebody you knew?
We used to work at Jack Henry. So, yes.
Yeah, so you know each other. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I'm scheduled to talk to Daniela and Summer next. The show. So that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. Coolio.
Yeah, Tim, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to convince people to make a DevRelCon in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And, the whole idea of the Canadian perspective and, helping people through podcasting, through, YouTube and all these other wonderful, Ray Winderlich, Kodako, all these wonderful things you've been doing over the years. Seems like it would be a pretty good match for you. So.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that Toronto is a pretty interesting choice for that sort of thing because this year is no North American DevRelCon.
For a small registration fee of $99.95, you can be a member. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, it just sounded like you were selling something.
No, it was just more like
you're waiting for the pitch, were you? Yeah.
Well.
I fell asleep already.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
it's just kind of funny because, I went earlier this year to the one in Japan. I will not be able to make it to the one in London, even though I would love to. And having one in North America, by being selfish, realistically, San Francisco, Silicon Valley would be ideal. Mm-hmm. Since that's not happening, where else is a great place? Toronto, because everybody who can't make it in the United States can absolutely make it into Canada. And it's super easy for Americans to go. So it just feels like the market opportunity.
You need a passport to go to Canada these days?
Yeah. Well, you need you probably can get through with your, I think you need a passport.
Yeah. I don't have a passport anymore. It expired I've never renewed it. I think it expired during the pandemic, so I never renewed it. Oops.
Yeah, no, that's right. You do need. My boss hasn't been to my office yet because he's his passport expired. Same deal. Yeah, that was a big long waiting list and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you look, if you scroll down to the sponsors, you'll see that MTJC is there by me because I'm donating my time for the interviews. So that's some love we're getting from that.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I was resurrecting my, while we're talking, I was trying to get my little Mac behind me running. I was going to get After Dark running on it, but yeah, I can find an image of a floppy disk online, but try and get that onto an actual physical disk. You know, because the old Macs, they don't talk SMB or TCP/IP even. They talk local talk and Apple talk. Remember those things? I can't even put it on the network, right? So, I mean, put it on the network.
Do they have Ethernet? They might have Ethernet.
I mean, I have Ethernet cards for these old guys. But the thing is, like, what I'm saying is, like, the problem is they talk Apple talk, not and the new Macs don't have Apple talk stacks anymore.
Right.
Which is the problem. So I just installed Mac OS 9 onto the G4 that sits behind me.
Surely there must be some vendor, unlike Alibaba, who has...
I have a floppy disk. I have a USB floppy disk.
I was going to say, surely somebody has a small little chip that replicates using Apple Talk, you know, as if you were talking from one device to another back in the olden days, which is actually a Wi-Fi enabled chip. It's like Arduino or something, or Raspberry Pi that can talk to your stuff.
Natively. You know, I bought a bunch of these little logic boards that are SCSI, right? And then you, instead of putting a physical hard drive in, you put an SD drive in, right? Because I can get SD disks all over the place, right? And so you can basically plug that into your SD slot on your Mac, dump some data onto it, and then you can plug it into the Mac as if it's a SCSI device, right? So I could actually replace the internal hard drive with an SD drive. So I bought a couple of those. I think I have an IDE one, and I have a couple of SCSI ones, because those boards are, and they're getting scarce, right? If you don't buy them now, you're never going to see them again, right? The old retro Macs. What was I looking for? We were talking about MTGC.
Well, what I was thinking of is, you're hopefully aware of the Street Fighter video game, you know, the arcade game, the fighting game series, right? So there was Street Fighter the movie, starring, Van Damme and Raul Julia. But then they also made an arcade game based on that. So there was Street Fighter the movie, the game. What I'm proposing here is more than just code, the book, the podcast. That's a nice way to just, take credit for whoever doing the book.
Yeah.
So and then we can make a movie out of it too, right? It could be the book, the podcast, the movie, or whatever.
We could, like the BlackBerry, we could, I'm losing my hair, so we could do I could be like the Basili character. Anyway, so hi, Mark, here is the ChatGPT description of our podcast.
Okay.
More Than Just Code podcast is the perfect source for iOS and Swift developers looking to stay up to date on the latest news and trends in the field. With helpful advice from experienced developers, it's the perfect way to stay informed and inspired.
Nice.
So I took the crap that I wrote on there years ago and put that on our website.
Cool.
Yep. So it says, each week, Jaime Lopez, Mark Rubin, and sometimes Greg Hewa and Tammy Coron and myself, Tim Mitra, will convene from across the continent to discuss iOS and Mac development. I wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Feedburner, holy cow, how old is Feedburner? Is it still around?
They were pretty early in the podcasting analytics and game, so.
Yeah, I have a link to our podcast on Feedburner, but I don't even know if they exist. That used to be Google or something, right? Yeah.
Feedburner.google.com is what happens when I go there.
Is it? Feedburner.com. Oh, here we go. Oh, we didn't talk about it. Have you guys done have you made a passcode for yourself in Safari, like a passkey?
I haven't yet, no.
I have not.
Oh. I have. I did it almost immediately.
Right. Do you say our goodbyes? We actually say that?
Oh, yeah. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.